This audio comes to you from the Science of Mind archives.
We take you now to Alice Tully Hall at Lincoln Center in New York to hear the Sunday morning religious science service. I get a question very often. People ask me, Dr. Barker, what do you consider to be the most important factor in life? And I always answer, mind. They say, well, I would think that with your background, you would say spirituality. And I said, I can't define it. I don't know how to define spirituality. Unless it's an essential goodness of life. Unless it's an essential living life wisely. But I do know one thing. I know that you and I are under a law of mind action, a law of cause and effect. And we cannot deviate from this law any more than we can deviate from the law of gravity. And that if there be a spirit anywhere, it would be in our minds. Well, that would have to be its location, because that's the only place where we are consciously aware. And so, your mind is the most important thing you have. My mind is the most important thing I have. What I do with it is the most important thing that I will ever do. All right, let's be still and take this into our deeper thinking of the subconscious mind. Now, we believe in spirit, we believe in God, we believe in light, we believe in mind. We believe that we are the result of an infinite thinker thinking. That we are the result of an infinite mind knowing and an infinite love giving. We are the embodiment of all this. We are the living witness of all this. It is all ours to use. It is a free gift. That which we are is free. What we do with it may put us in bondage, but that which we are is free. For we are those who are created by an infinite intelligence to be intelligence. So subjectively we accept this, we know it, and therefore it is true. So it is. Now we'll turn to the third inside page of our program this morning, those of us here at Alice Tully Hall, and we're going to sing. By the way, I enjoyed this hymn, song, rather, so well, we're going to have it again next month. Then we may go back to the other one, which I love. All right, in mind is our trust, in truth our delight, in love and in joy we have faith in the right. Within us there reigns now a mind for our own, a wisdom eternal where every truth is known. And the second verse, we stand and declare our perfect release and claim our full share of health and of peace. All glory and praise to the wisdom within. Our visions are raised and our triumphs begin. All right, good words to a grand old tune. Shall we stand and sing it? I'm talking today on the idea, joy is an inside job. I think that happiness is the result of a planned program. I don't think it just happens. And I'm talking now about a sense of well-being. Not necessarily a surface joy, which we would get in a comedy situation. But I'm talking about down underneath. We had a very good teacher in England years ago, Mr. Rawson. And when people came to him to be helped, after they had told him everything that was wrong, he would say to them, "What will make you happy?" And they'd say, "That isn't what I came here for. I came here to tell you I have this, that, or the other." And he'd say, "All right, you told me. Now I'm asking you, what will make you happy?" And he found, as I have found, when I've asked that question, that very few people have any planned program for happiness. What will make you happy? Then his reminder was, if you can afford it, do it. If you can afford it, do it. Now he lived in an age, he died around 1920, he lived in an age prior to all of our credit systems. Maybe if he were alive today, he'd say, "Do it and charge it." But probably not. So he always said, "What will make you happy? And if you can afford it, do it." I have thought of this many times and used this many times in my own life. I have thought of something that would make me happy, and I'd say, "Well, I can afford it. Why don't I do it?" And I proceed to do it. And I discover then that another idea comes along, and another. Now, the people around us today are pretty much depressed people. And I don't want you among them. And it's too easy to take that route. But it is not easy to program your mind to happiness. And yet, the great teacher said, I came that your joy shall be full. Evidently, he wanted people to be happy. Joy is an inside job. You program it. Now, it may express outwardly as situations, people, events, things. But unless it's on the inside, it won't operate on the outside, no matter how pleasant conditions are. And I believe that joy is one of the great reasons for being alive. I think it's far more important to be happy than it is to be rich. You may not. And that's all right. You're not supposed to agree with everything I say. But I do believe that joy is a spiritual inheritance, which we either develop or don't. We have all known people that have been unhappy since the day they were born. They're unhappy now, and probably they will be as long as they're on this plane of life. Whether they'll be any happier after death or not, I don't know, but I doubt it. Because they take themselves with them. Now, can you change your patterns on happiness? Yes. But it takes just as much effort as it does to change any other subconscious mind pattern. The subconscious mind always resists change. And I've often said to you that whenever there is an argument between the conscious and the subconscious mind, unless spiritual treatment is done, the subconscious mind will always win. Because the subconscious mind has in it what you have put in it. So my subconscious mind has what I've put in it. So I can't blame the subconscious mind, which would be easy to do. Everything goes wrong because of my subconscious mind, only because of what I've put in the subconscious mind. Because the subconscious mind is impersonal, utterly impersonal. It takes the material I give it, arranges it, and projects it. That's exactly what it does. Or as I often say, it knows what to do and how to do it, but it doesn't know that it's doing it. Because it is impersonal, it is unconscious, and it functions. Now, can you program happiness? Yes. And the first thing you do is to contemplate happiness. I say to people, not only what will make you happy, but can you think about being happy? And they look at me and say, I don't really think I can. Now, not all people. Why don't you, sometime later in the day, say, all right, I'm going to think about not only what would make me happy, but think about happiness. Now, if you can worry easily, then you can change the direction of thought and emotion, and you can be creative easily. The best worriers don't know it. But if they were ever to find our instruction, they'd make the best exponents. Because they know exactly how to give their mind and emotions to worry. And once they learn how to give that same mind and emotions over to a creative idea, they would be tremendous. Now, naturally, they don't want our kind of instruction. They want to go on worrying. I know people who thoroughly and joy worry. I know it from the way they talk, from the way they have their attitudes, and they are truly content in their negatives. Now you aren't, and I'm not. How do I think about happiness? You may like to review back in your mind the times you have been happy. But the trouble with going back into the past is it usually digs up the times you've been unhappy. Because the times you have been unhappy are far more dramatic than the times when you were happy. They are far more emotionally charged than the times when you were happy. But if you can go back and review happiness, it'll help. As long as you watch that pitfall of unhappiness, you can say to yourself, I am happy. And your whole mind will come up and say, that is not so. That is not so. But you can say it to yourself, and you can repeat it to yourself, and if you do it long enough, you'll begin to believe it. See, people in great trouble say to professional people like myself, I will never be happy again. And I say, I deny that right here and right now. Don't ever say that again. Don't put that in your subconscious mind. And I discovered that a short time afterwards, maybe months, but at any rate, a short time afterwards, that they are happy again. Now again, I'm not talking about exuberant joy. I'm talking about a depth well-being. Now we all like joy on the surface. I do, you do, it's right. But we can't watch comedies all the time. And we have jobs to do, homes to manage, all the rest of this. And we do them with our basic mental attitude. And if the basic mental attitude is a defeated one, then we don't do anything very well. Because this is projected into that which we do. Now, the defeated person is a tragic soul. You ask them about hope, and they don't know. Well, they know the word. You ask them if they're looking forward to the future, and you can tell by the look on their face they're in an endurance contest. They hope they'll live. They trust things might get better. But they are emotionally conditioned to defeat. And they will say to me, or to other professional workers, well, how come after all the years that I've been unhappy, you tell me I can be happy? Yes. One of Ernest Holmes, and he's the founder of this teaching, classic statements is, the thing that makes you sick is the thing that makes you well. Meaning your mind and your use of it. Now, the thing that has made you unhappy is the thing that will make you happy. That is your mind and the way you use it. Now, when people say, I have nothing to be happy about, they are, of course, exaggerating. There's got to be at least one object in your home that makes you happy. There's got to be at least one friend that you can say makes you happy. Or there is a hobby you have that makes you happy. Or if you're have a green thumb, plants make you happy. And if you own a dog or a cat, the dog or cat makes you happy. And that's good. So you can find objects of attention. And you can think on these things. Paul's great advice. Think on these things. And he gave a list of ideas for us to contemplate. And they were ideas that would fulfill us and make us happy. Now we come to that word, fulfill. What can I do to have a more fulfilled life? Well, develop purposes and then plan them into being. I often say to people, you're going to be around an awful long time, you know. Do you want to stay this way the rest of your life? And they say, no. Then I say, well, you will unless you do something about it. Because no one is going to change you but yourself. Last Sunday I told you that falling in love was not enough. It's a lovely temporary sensation. It's not enough. It takes programming. Just as joy takes programming. Anything in your life takes programming. Defeat takes programming. Failure takes programming. Flanders Dunbar in her book on psychosomatic medicine, Mind and Body, says that there are no accidents, that we program accidents. And she's a very noted psychiatrist. That we program what happens to us, in other words. Now, she wouldn't make as large a statement as that, but she infers it. Because you and I are always programming something, and it might just as well be pleasant. So I can go home this afternoon, contemplate every disaster in my life. Being alone, I can weep and weep and weep, use up a whole box of Kleenex. Or I can go home, sit myself down, and say, all right, what are you going to do with the rest of your life? What can you do to be happy? What do you need to think and contemplate to be happy? And work out a plan program. Now, we tend in times that are difficult to withdraw. And withdrawing from the world is not your answer. We have that great belief here in New York City that it is not wise to go out after dark. I don't know. I don't believe it. I go out after dark all the time. But this is a common belief, and it programs many people, and I don't even know that it's wrong for them. I know it's only wrong for myself. The tendency is to withdraw when you're unhappy. And as you withdraw, your circle of events and your circle of friends becomes smaller and smaller. And many people finally get in the center and sit alone with that thing that you were taught as a child, nobody loves me, I'm going out in the garden and eat worms. You know. At least that's what the Barkers taught me. Now, I never did it. And I'm sure I was as unhappy in growing up as any other individual, because growing up is not the happiest experience in the world. Coming to the present. There are ideas that can circulate in my mind that will give me a sense of well-being and a sense of fulfillment. As you know, I wrote a book some years ago with Dr. Maltz, is no longer available, called The Conquest of Frustration. In other words, it was a book to help people become fulfilled within themselves. How much good it did, I'll never know. I'm sure it did do good, because any book on this subject does good. But what we were trying to say, Dr. Maltz and I, was that, again, you have to program it, change your mind to it, and keep it on that plateau with the program if you want to be fulfilled. And I'm sorry to say, for most people that you know and I know, they just couldn't care less. They couldn't care less. If you were to say to them, can't you take 5 minutes a day for happy thinking, they'd look at you and say, what on earth has happened to you now? Yeah. Can you take 5 minutes a day to do creative thinking, fulfillment thinking? No, they're too busy. They're not interested. And they're getting along the best they can, they tell you. Well, I don't want to get along the best I can. I want to get along better. And they say, well, I had to manage my money very closely, but I just barely meet my obligations. Well, that's hell. I'm talking now about a location in the old church. Yeah. I want none of that truck at all. I don't want to be fairly healthy. I am healthy. And I decree that into my subconscious mind many times a day. I don't want to be just half healthy. I don't want to be half prosperous. I don't want to be half happy. I don't want to be half fulfilled. I want the whole thing. And I'm the only person that can make it true for myself. And that's what I'm doing. And you're the only person that can make it true for yourself. And that's what I trust you're going to do. But it takes deliberate thought. It takes deliberate thought. People say to me, well, Dr. Barker, I read your treatments, and they don't seem to be doing me any good. And I said, first of all, do you read them aloud or silently? Oh, no, I read them silently. Well, start reading them in a good, firm voice. You might convince yourself. Oh? Yes. Then after you've read them and partially memorized them, then change them and write your own. Oh? Yes. I should write my own? Yes, but I don't know how to write my own. Well, read enough of mine or Mr. Holmes or someone else, you'll find out how to write your own. Heaven knows there's been enough books of instruction on it. I have a little gray booklet called Treatment, What It Is and How to Do It. And I am sure I have sold over 200,000 copies of that in the last 15, 20 years. Sure of it. Now, how many of the 200-odd souls that have purchased it have done more than to glance through it? I'll never know. But this is true of any book of any author. You all have books at home you have never read. Even the ones you bought here, you have at home and possibly never read. And that's good. We've made the profit on them. We average between 1/3 and 40% profit on every book we sell. And it helps pay the rent. Now to come back. If the 200,000 copies had reached one person, each copy, one person, who really tried to change their program of thinking. And they may have, I don't know. They would be happier, more fulfilled people. You're going to say, well, if I get a little booklet like that, will it do it? No, you have to do it, with or without the booklet. If books could do it, we would have changed the world long before this. If books could do it, we would have changed the world long before this. Books can only do it when the reader of the book does it. Now, this would be true in any field. It'll only work when you work it. Right back to the beginning again. It's your mind, and what you do with it determines your happiness, your unhappiness, your fulfillment, or your frustration. Now, is it too late to change? It's never too late to change. Never. And remember this. Years ago, a student of mine in Syracuse, New York, 84 years old, lady, developed arthritis in the right knee. And she wrote me. And she said, can you help me? And I said, knee problems are a fear of the future or the fact that you don't have a future. What do you intend to do the next 10 years of your life? And she wrote back and said, look, young man, I'm 84. Well, I said, what's that got to do with it? What have you always wanted to do? And as long as you can afford it, why don't you do it? She said, I've always wanted to go to Paris. Well, I said, get. And a couple of weeks later, she came through New York en route. She said, I'm beginning to walk better. And I said, of course. When she came back from the trip, she stopped in New York. And she said, I had no trouble walking. I walked all over central Paris. And I said, what are you going to do when you get back to Syracuse? Because you know, you haven't cured this without a further plan. It doesn't stop here. And so she began programming things she wanted to do and enjoyed doing. And at the age of around 90, she had a heart attack during her sleep, didn't wake up. Which is the only respectable way to go. But she was active right up to that time that she went to bed that evening. Active. So don't tell me it's too late. I don't care if you're 84. You can always do something. Because your mind can always change. And when your mind is changed, your experience changes. Now, it may be that you are already a happy person. If you are, fine. I'm fairly happy most of the time. I may have some frustrations, but I don't know. But I'm sure if I went to a psychiatrist, I'd soon find out. Which is one of the reasons I'm not going, because I don't want to know. Sometimes ignorance is a blessing. Yes, you can change. I can change. We can all change. When we want to. Here we go back. It's why the great teacher said, whatsoever things ye desire, if you believe that you can have them, you will have them. Desire. He didn't say, whatsoever things ye need. I need to pay the rent. I need to do this. I need to do that. I need to do the other. But what do I desire? Here's your depth motivation of emotion. What do I desire? Good question. And if I desire it, then I've got to believe that I have it, even though at the moment I don't have it. And you're going to say, well, that's too much work. All right, then stay the way you are. I have to believe that I have it, even though at the moment I don't have it. And that takes some doing. And I'm not talking about delusion or fantasy. I'm talking about believing. Whatsoever things you desire, if you believe them, you will have them. But you will not have them without the belief. Things don't happen, they are caused. Situations don't happen, they are caused. And you are a cause to a world of your effect. And the world outside of you is a world of effect. And the world inside your consciousness is your world of cause. And that is why the greatest thing you can do is to handle your mind and emotions correctly. Meaning creatively, meaning positively, meaning with vision. With a sense of everything will be all right. Now, it takes some doing. After what I listen in news reports, read in newspapers, it takes a bit of doing. But who are the people that have helped the world? The gloomy? No. The optimistic? The hopeful? The people who say, this too shall pass, and something better will come along. Those are the people that have changed the world. Your great scientists may not know that's the way they're working, but that essentially is the way they're working in any field. They are hopeful. Think of the millions of dollars in research on any disease today. Why? Because they're hopeful. They're not studying the disease for the joy of it. They have hope. They have expectancy. In any of the field of science, this sense of it will be better. And that's what I wish you'd do in your program thinking. Even if everything's good now, let's have it better. And if things aren't good now, then by all means, let's have them better. And I'm not talking about trying to change the world. I'm talking about trying to change you and myself. Because I want, in every area of my life, improvement at any age. Because, ladies and gentlemen, I have arrived at a plateau in my life where if I wanted to, I could settle down very comfortably. Settle down, give a talk on Sunday mornings, not teach much because that's very tiring, see very few people, relax, might even retire and take a pension. Yeah. I'm not going to. No siree. I want none of that nonsense. Fine for the people that have it. Luckily, I'm in a profession where it is not imposed upon me. Nope. I'm going to keep right at this thing. And I'm going to be talking better and better and better every Sunday from here on in, as I have been in the past. Every once in a while, an old-timer who hasn't been here in a long time, and should have, comes up to me in the lobby afterwards and says, "Oh, Dr. Barker, you're so much better than you used to be." Now, they think that's a compliment. I always think, well, how bad was I? You know, I must have been pretty bad. At any rate, it is a compliment, so they tell me that I'm talking much better than I used to. Good, I want them to say the same thing next year and the year after. Because it's too easy to give in to the routines and the negatives of life. Very easy. And people say, well, Dr. Barker, you've worked so hard to build this organization and all. And I often think back and say, well, I should have worked harder at it. It's a very nice organization, but we've got a long way to go. There's no finished plateau in my consciousness, and I hope there's none in yours. And so if you do retire, fine. What are you going to do with it? Have a grand time. Or sit and look at the same four walls and grow old. You know, that's what that lady of 84 was going to do. She couldn't hardly get out of the house anymore. Can't you hear a tone of voice? Yeah. I got her out of the house, shipped her off to Paris. They cured her. Cured. But it'd been so easy to just sit there, you know, in the home, hobble to the kitchen for a cup of tea, and all the rest of it. No. But she did what she knew she should do. It wasn't just because I told her. She'd been in this thinking for years. All I did was bring an idea to her attention. And she took the idea and did something about it. Joy is an inside job. What are you going to do about it? I know what I'm going to do about it. I'm going to see to it that I'm happy. I'm going to program it as I have in the past. It doesn't happen unless I cause it to happen. It won't happen to you unless you cause it to happen. Now, you're going to say, well, I may have to make a great many changes in my ways of thinking and feeling. All right, make them. Not easy, but so what? Hard work, mentally and emotionally, won't hurt any of us. Do it. All right, so end of the lesson. They've got the craziest lighting out here today, haven't they? All that light down there is supposed to be on me. I'll go down and sit with you, ladies. All right, we're going to do what we always do at this hour. We're going to take up the morning collection. And we invite you to follow the theme of the morning talk and give us happy money. And in turn, we shall use it with joy for the maintenance and the expansion of this great thing we're doing here. Next Sunday, being the first Sunday in the month, we will have our usual, what I call our therapy session, at 10:45 ahead of the broadcast. That's when I sit down in a chair over there near the edge, and you and I talk back and forth and think together and get results. It's spiritual mind treatment in the highest sense of that phrase. So that's next Sunday at 10:45. In the old days, we used to have lots of people who drove in from all around to come to that session. And so may I suggest to them that if they can get a bus or a train, come in anyway. It's worth the trip. And be with us if you can. I hope you realize how valuable these Sunday morning broadcasts are for the people who can't get here due to the present energy crisis, and how they're listening to this program all over the East Coast and West Coast. And we can go to them when they can't get to us. And I think it's just wonderful that we're able to fulfill this. So next Sunday morning, 10:45, for those of us that can get here in one way or another easily, and I'll be here. Now, it is the first of the month, and you want your magazines. They're what I call my tools for the garden of my mind. And the first one is Creative Thought Magazine, for which I write, and for which right now I am writing the center page lesson. And you're going to all want it. You know why? It's entitled, the lesson this in March is entitled Money Thinking. Don't you want it? I'll read it again. It's a class lesson on money thinking. Now, if you're too spiritual to want any money, then will it to the church and go on your way quick. Faster the better. All right, that's Creative Thought Magazine. It is now 50 cents a copy. And I particularly want the radio audience to note the change in price. Like everything else, it has moved from its former price to 50 cents. And the other magazine, the other tool, is the Science of Mind magazine. An excellent one. That has not changed in price. It is still 60. So we'll be glad to fill mail orders for the listeners on the air. Just send it to us at 14 East 48th Street, New York, New York, 10017. Do not send it here to Tully Hall, as it might be weeks before I would get it. All right, this evening we have one more activity, and that's at 14 East 48th Street. We have Mr. Fritz Hermans giving a lecture at 6 o'clock. And people are enjoying this and are helped by it. So you might want to, if you're free at that hour, to come in for tonight's lecture at 6 o'clock. Mr. Grayson is back from his one-week vacation and is naturally refreshed, inspired, and all the rest when you get away from here and go south and come back. So his classes resume this week, and he is full of gusto, and you'll see him outside later. And he wasn't there long enough to get a tan, in case you ladies want to know. And maybe got a little color, I don't know. At any rate, I will be teaching as usual. We have the noon meetings every day, as you know from the program. And Wednesday evening, our 6 o'clock lecture this week is by Mr. Henry Couperus, the Saturday speaker. And he has given me the title, Establishing Your Beliefs. And now the last, all of these Sunday talks and many other, no, not many, and some other things are available on cassette tapes. Stop out at the table today and look them over. you want today's talk, you can order it. There's also a wonderful tape out there on unexpected money. It's a great thing. Now, you have out there is a yellow sheet telling about Mr. Grayson's seminar next month up in the Pocono Mountains on a weekend. So get one if you're interested. All right, let's pull this together now before we go out into a beautiful world. And get clear. I can change my mind. I may or may not do so. I can program happiness. I may or may not do so. But I can. And I can remind myself often that joy is an inside job. So I don't need a book of cartoons to make me laugh, although they help. But they are temporary. But from the time that I wake up in the morning till I go to bed at night, I want a basic happiness underneath. A basic feeling that life is good and that everything is all right. Then I do not linger with those who prophesy the doom. Even if they should be right, so what? I will be happy. I will be free. I will be clear. I will do what I want to do in ways of wisdom and in ways of joy. That's what I'll do. All right, shall we stand for our closing idea together? There is one God, one spirit, one truth, one intelligence, one joy, one happiness, one fulfillment. We are all immersed in it. We are all a part of it. It is in action in us. So now, we are open and receptive to being happy. I decree this for you and for myself. We are open and receptive to happiness. All right? So it is.
This Sunday morning lecture of religious science has been broadcast from Alice Tully Hall at Lincoln Center in New York. Please address all letters and contributions to Dr. Raymond Charles Barker at 14 East 48th Street, New York 10017. A list of books and pamphlets is available on request. You're cordially invited to attend these lectures in person or listen again next Sunday morning at 11:05 for another broadcast of the Sunday morning lecture of religious science.
For more spiritual content like this, visit scienceofmindarchives.com.